Welcome to the T2 Hubcast with me, Spencer Locker.
And me, Bernice Casserly.
Hiya, Bernice.
Hello.
How's it been going?
Good. How are you?
Oh, good. Yeah, a couple of good days. Some great delivery recently. Been doing a bit of travelling.
Yes.
Stacking up the miles.
Yes, always.
Meeting some new clients, So which is always good.
And you were in Scotland last week?
Yeah. I was. Really enjoyed that. It was a really interesting session.
Good.
Really, some really good people.
Yes.
Doing a good job.
And that definitely makes our job more enjoyable. I think as well, it's just one of the great things about our job is the opportunity to meet new people all the time and different people and people who live and work in very different worlds to us.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a big kind of thing for me.
Absolutely. I was talking to my father-in-law the other day. Right. I don't want to turn into a northern comedian. My father-in-law. No, I don't want to turn into a northern comedian. I was talking to my father-in-law and he said, "You're really clever, aren't you?" No. Well, why would you say that? And he said, "Well, you work with all these people." I said, "What do you mean?" He says, "Well, you work with the NHS, you work with fire and rescue, you work with military, you work with communications, you work with businesses, you work with manufacturing, you work with sports, and you work, these people pay you for your knowledge, you know." And I'm like, "Yeah." He says, "So how do you know about all these things?" "I don't. I know about people." And that's what all these things share.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when we start talking about difference and meeting different people, and I think that's what one of the things that makes this job particularly good for me is because you don't know what you're getting.
Yes.
And usually it's people sat there going, "I don't, we've got a problem," or "Have we got a problem?" Or "How could we do this better?" Or "You know what, we're doing really well here, how could we better?" And there's all sorts of different things. And it's like when we deliver those day one, those leading yourself days, and somebody might turn around and go, "You've done thousands of them, you're not bored." No. Because when I'm out there, particularly when we're doing like print and things like that, then you're delivering print and we can talk about a certain combination of print unconscious motivators. And you say, "Oh, this might mean that you do this and this." Or I say, "Well, it looks more like this." And you're like, "Really? Give me more.
Yeah.
Tell me more." Because I hadn't looked at it from that perspective. I've never really considered that. But that's really interesting intelligence because they're coming and saying, "Actually, it's similar to that, but it looks more like this. And this is how I perceive it." Right, okay, good stuff. So, yeah, that's why I love my job and don't get bored.
Yeah, I think it's important for anyone and everyone, but that's the beauty of our job is every day truly is different. I know that's a sentence that many people say, but it is. We can deliver the same workshop or a similar workshop, but it always feels different.
Yeah.
And speaking for myself on personal perspective, based on my print and conscious motivators, that's really important because I don't like
being bored. Very much so. But I've got a question for you.
Yes.
Are you happy?
I'm really happy because it's payday tomorrow. So, yeah, ask me tomorrow. I'll be jumping around like Tigger.
Yeah. Going shopping after work. Getting some food. Not going to be living on dust and twigs for the next month. Okay, good. So I'm really glad that you're happy. Because one of the things that I wanted to talk to today was this 7 harsh truths from Harvard's 85-year study of happiness, which obviously you knew about before we came in. Obviously, I'm not going to just drop things on you. But yeah, if we can consider these 7 harsh truths, I think I won't say the 7 lessons. I do believe that people can take from these what they want to take and they can apply it how they want to apply it. But when we sort of say, "Happy, are you happy?" And some people go, "Fair to middling, well, I'm all right, mustn't grumble, won't moan because nobody ever listens."
Yeah,
that sort of thing, yeah? We meet so many different people on a daily basis, as you said there, and happiness, I think, is something that people fundamentally pursue.
Yes.
Different ways. And I think that some people see it as a destination. Mm-hmm. Some people see it as a journey. But I tell you what, because I like definitions.
Yes.
So what is happiness? So I did a little bit of reading, and I like it when something comes back and goes, what sort of happiness? And I'm like, ooh, what does that mean? So hedonic or eudaimonic happiness. So hedonic well-being and happiness is I'm enjoying myself right now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Pursuit of pleasure, avoidance of pain.
Yeah.
Yeah. So remember what we talk on these day ones. Yeah. So that's hedonic well-being. It's something that is, you get a fix.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. It's temporary and it's, and you know what? We all need a bit of balance. Mm-hmm. And it's part of that balance. The other one, that eudaimonic. Eudaimonic is life is satisfying and meaningful regardless of what is going on outside of the current moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is authenticity, meaning, virtue, and growth. So this is long-term happiness. Mm. This is something that is, I am authentically enjoying it. This is something I have purpose, I have meaning, I have something that I'm pursuing. Rather than the hedonic, which is in the here and now, the eudaimonic is more about the long-term.
Yeah.
So actually, eudaimonic is a Greek word, and if you literally translate it into the English language, it means good spirit. Which makes sense,
yeah,
doesn't it? Really,
it does.
Yeah. So when we start talking about the fix for the hedonic, the eudaimonic is a flow. So when we start talking about flow state theory, about challenge and support and feeling in that flow period, it's actually being good. So hedonic, doing what feels good.
Mm.
Eudaimonic, doing what feels right.
Yes.
Yeah. So when we start thinking about that, we're like, right, okay. So now we can see that some people might have an imbalance.
Mm.
Some people might have more hedonic and less eudaimonic. Maybe younger people.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In regards to younger people and older people,
Well, that and anything else that you've got to say.
I think. Taking it back to what you said a moment ago in regards to happiness, what is that and what does that mean? It's something that, as you said earlier, you could ask anyone, are you happy? And you get like a real basic response is, I'm okay. Yeah, I'm okay. I'm all right. I'm fine. I did it as well. But that happiness, it's a feeling. And as you describe it, it's a state. I think it's really hard to truly identify what that looks like, or what the answer is. Sometimes for people, it's a case of yes or no. Some people find it really difficult to say yes or no to that because it might be that they don't understand what happiness is to them. Because so often around the world, we make assumptions, we compare ourselves to others, we are completely bamboozled by thousands of images and statements on the internet that we didn't have thousands of years ago. Mm. So therefore, naturally, our brains question ourselves and think, is that something that I need? Mm. Should I be doing this? Is that going to make me happy? But people sometimes struggle to identify what specifically it is that makes them happy.
Mm.
Because they think, oh, I see Spence and he's got this fantastic smile on his face and he's got a new car. Does that mean that I need a new car because that'll make me happy?
They're happy because that's in their harmony in their lives. If I do that, will that make me happy?
Yes.
So, yeah, very much so. I fully concur. Because when we say we've got a balance, we've got to have the eudaimonic long-term, and we've also got to have the hedonic. We've got to have that balance.
Yeah.
However, if it's out of balance, so this is one of the things that I was talking about with younger people.
Mm.
Yeah. And I'm not saying this is the case of all younger people, but that hedonic living in the moment, living in the now, doing what makes me happy now.
Yes.
And getting to the point where it's almost, and I would love to use a different word, but I'm not going to, addictive.
Mm.
So doing things that this gives me pleasure, so I'm going to do more of it.
Yes.
And the thing is, over a period of time, you become sort of immune to the hedonic effects.
Mm.
So you've got to do more. You've got to do bigger. You've got to do bright. Yeah?
Yeah.
So over a period of time, if you immerse yourself in the hedonic, then there's that capacity for you doing bigger, better, more dangerous stuff, potentially more dangerous, more threatening stuff,
yeah,
in the pursuit of this high, this fix. Yeah? And many of us have done that when we were younger. And then actually we regain a little bit of balance, where we find a little bit of purpose.
Yeah.
Find something that we can sort of absolutely sort of commit to, I suppose, mm-hmm. whether it's a relationship maybe, or maybe it's a different pursuit or something else. But we can potentially regain that balance. So sometimes it might go the other way, where we don't have any hedonic, but we've got very much more of the long term. Yeah?
Yes.
So, yeah, that's quite an interesting thing to think about.
Mm. And I think you are right. I think often, and it comes up in loads of different studies as well, but people of a younger generation, some studies even say kind of 40 and below as well, where you're still classed as a kind of a younger adult, let's say. Mm-hmm. But this is also where sometimes we are chasing that short-term happiness based on what we think that we need. But actually those people who are of an older generation can probably relay specifically what they truly needed at that moment.
May very well be, yeah.
Reflection and also as well that realization that actually I shouldn't be comparing myself or my situation to others and I should just be focusing on me,
yeah.
What I need.
Because I suppose the actual specifics of all this is going to be very personal.
Yes.
Because, and we'll come on to the sort of social media thing where, well, they're doing that and they're happy. If I do that, that'll make me happy.
Yeah.
But if it doesn't make me happy, well, am I a failure?
Yes.
Yeah? Well, yeah. No, you're just not then.
Yeah.
But just to scoot back a little bit to your reference to the 40s,
mm.
Yeah? Apparently life does begin at 40.
Mm.
Because up to that point, you're learning and researching.
Developing as
yeah.
well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you get to that 40 period, it's like, hey, qualified now. I've got a certificate from the School of Hard Knocks. Where we go. Yeah. Excellent. Okay. So let's just have a look at these 7 harsh truths from Harvard's 85-year study of happiness. So number one, the key to a happy life is quality relationships,
mm-hmm.
right? So this is interesting, quality rather than quantity, not the number of friends we have, rather the depth and authenticity of these connections.
Yes.
Yeah? Cultivating meaningful relationships takes time and effort, but the rewards are immeasurable. Yeah?
Yeah.
So what we're looking at here is you're going to have friends, you're going to have acquaintances, you're going to have relationships, some are going to succeed, some are going to fail.
Mm-hmm.
It's all part of people coming in your life to teach you something maybe at that time and yeah. then and moving up. But there's going to be other people there who are going to be, but you're going to have a quality relationship. They're sort of the long term. They're the people who come into your life and make a positive impact, positive influences.
Yeah.
Somebody was saying, I remember saying something about, you are the sum of the 5 people you spend the most time with.
Mm.
What does that look like?
I think that's something is really key and important. I've seen so many people who have a ridiculous amount of friends. Like they know everyone. And my thought process is a case of how much happiness do you get from that? Because for many people, whether you're introverted or extroverted, I think that could be potentially quite overwhelming. From my own personal perspective as well, I have a very small group of what I would say are true friends. I have people that I know, they're acquaintances, I know who they are. But when it comes to that friends, that the people that I class as friends, they are solely based on the quality. Some of them I've maybe not known so long, but I've got some friends as well that I've known for over 30 years.
Mm.
But the reason why I'm friends with them is, as you say, is based on that level of quality because that's what gives me that feeling of good spirit and happiness.
Yeah.
I enjoy being in their comfort company and I get benefit from being around them as well.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, just a couple of notes here. I'm going to come back to you in a minute because I know you've been reading that book about the study. However, when we start talking about what people bring into your lives,
mm-hmm.
And you'll know that there's some people bring some things in, other yeah. people bring other things in,
mm-hmm.
and that's great. I saw a thing called social fitness. So I think it's basically somebody's trying to actually sit down and quantify what these qualities are. I don't think it's an exhaustible list, but The seven things that I that was on this list was, number one, safety and security. So this is what people, the qualities that people bring into your life.
Yes.
So one, safety and security. Two, learning and growth. Three, emotional closeness and confiding. Four, identity affirmation and shared experience. Five, romantic intimacy. Six, help, information and factual, and practical rather. And seven, fun and relaxation. Now, when we've talked about, we all do our thing in the rooms when we're talking to delegates, but one of the things that we tend to talk about is that graphic equalizer thing. So is the at certain times of our lives, there'll be some of these that are quite high, and potentially other ones will be quite low. And they've got that capacity to move around, depending on who is in your life and who is stimulated. So you may very well be hitting all of those most of the time, and then actually the fun and relaxation bit is quite low. But then somebody will come in your life and ramp that up. Yeah, the influence that they bring allows you to be able to do that.
Yes.
But by the same measure, it might be that when that goes up, something else comes down a little bit. So that's all right. But and I want to say this, particularly where number five is concerned, romantic and intimacy. When we start talking about the quality of relationships, it's not necessarily about marriage or living with somebody. It's important to have friends and loved ones you can talk to and rely on.
Yes.
So it's not sort of saying, not judgy, well, you married yet? You know, you need to get married and have kids. That's it. I'm not saying that.
Grandparents.
Well, yeah, that's it. And that's that. And I needed to do that because when we start talking about quality relationships, I suppose the best way of recognizing or acknowledging a quality relationship is committing yourself to somebody. And that might not be marriage. I mean, I'm an old guy, you know, okay. I'm sort of a bit of a traditionalist. But it's that commitment, isn't it? And sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't work out. We've all been through that situation. But what I'm saying is as many quality relationships.
Yes.
Quality, not quantity. So you were looking at the book about that sort of thing.
Yes, in regards to, that's kind of one of the key things that the study identified and was the importance of relationships. And as you said, it isn't just that kind of romantic relationship. Every interaction that you have with a person, any other human being, that's considered, it's a relationship or connection with that person. And that is one of the key things that the study has found, and it's still ongoing as well. So we're into multiple generations of the study now. But one thing that I think is, I suppose, like a takeaway that listeners or people who are watching can take away from this is an opportunity to assess what's going on in my life right now. So if I think about who is in my life, and this is something you can do as a practical activity with a bit of paper as well. Who is in my life right now? And based on these people, how do they make me feel? So is it that this person, I feel energized after I've spent time with them? Do I feel better? It links into the social fitness as well. So do I get fun from them? Do I feel as I'm able to ask for help or get help and all of those other things? Do I feel good after being around that person?
Yeah.
Or do I feel depleted? Do I feel fatigued?
Okay. Yeah.
Do I feel as though that was hard work? It was effort. I didn't enjoy that time. That wasn't time well spent. So you've got two different things there. What you can then assess, so that's your quality. So if I feel energized from spending time with that person versus do I feel depleted, that helps me identify, am I getting, is that a good quality relationship? The next aspect of this is how often do I see them? So is it that I see this person regularly and actually when I spend time with them, majority of the time I feel depleted and I see them all the time, what impact is that going to have on my overall happiness?
Right, that makes sense, yeah.
Versus if I think of my best friend who I've known since we were really, really little, I've identified that I have a really good, strong quality relationship there and I feel energized, I feel great and I love spending time with her. I don't see her that often. That tells me, actually, I need to utilize that friendship more. I can get so much more happiness from spending time with that individual because I know that we hit all of those social fitness boxes.
Right, okay. And I suppose there's going to be the potential there for us to do that unwittingly. So we tend to be drawn more to these people that we perceive as giving us energy and positivity and try and avoid the people who are negative and bring us down.
Yeah, so it comes down to when you think of who's in your life, this particular individual, how do they make me feel?
Yeah.
Do I feel good? Do I feel a bit?
Yeah.
That tells you whether or not you've got a good quality relationship.
Sounds good to me.
And then assess the frequency of it.
Yeah.
Is it that I spend lots of time with that person and I feel a bit? That tells me that's a friendship that I maybe need to let go of. Because it's not giving me happiness.
At least reassess.
Yes, reassess is a better word.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a bit more brutal.
Yeah. Go. You're dead to me. You're dead to me. Yeah. Okay. Second, number two, loneliness is deadly. Chronic stress. So when we start talking about this, we're not talking about introverts, the difference between introverts and extroverts and things like that.
Yeah.
What we're talking about is social isolation. Social isolation can lead to shorter lifespans, increased vulnerability to various diseases, and a pervasive sense of reduced well-being. Now, obviously, in recent history, pandemic, social distancing, and not only that, but we can start thinking about sort of older members of the community, so they're going to be isolated, potentially feeling isolated. People are feeling isolated from their families, their friends and things like that. But we're in a different time now. We're moving forward. But does this make a mark? If it's something that you've been through, is this something that might inspire you to go out and challenge that loneliness and get more? Or is it something that you sort of sit in and go, I don't like this and I'm not going to do anything about it?
Yeah, that's dependent on your mindset. How you perceive it. Some people naturally would sit in it and think, here I am lonely and I'm not enjoying myself. I'm not truly happy. But some people accept that because they think that's what they deserve.
Yeah.
Whereas other people, completely different. It's a case of, you know what? I'm not feeling great at the moment. I am feeling lonely. So you know what? I'm going to do something different and I'm going to do something about that. That's going to be based on how you view that situation.
Yeah. So again, we can look at this with a bit of a, I suppose, one eye on challenge and threat state, can't we? So our sense of purpose.
Yeah.
Am I traveling? Is what I am doing something that I want, or is it because I don't want that?
Yes.
Yeah. Am I moving towards what I want or away from what I don't want?
Yeah.
And that's whether it's something you want, which is positive and challenging, something negative, well, I don't want that. I don't care where I go, just as long as it's not there. That's quite negative, isn't it?
Yeah.
You've got a negative sort of influence there.
And if you go back to the previous point around the qualities, so let's say, for example, I'm someone who I don't feel that happiness, however you define that.
Yeah.
I'm not feeling happy at the moment and I'm actually feeling quite lonely, but based on past experiences and past relationships, friendships, whoever those people are, if the quality of those is low, then am I going to want to seek out to those people?
Probably not.
No, I might actually prefer to be a little bit lonely because I know that those aren't people that's going to give me the boost that I need or fulfill that loneliness.
Yeah. Yeah. I get it. Totally agree. Yeah. Totally agree. Number three. Being introverted is not a disadvantage. So again, this is, I suppose, is a bit of a play on the quality versus quantity bit.
Yeah.
You don't have to be the center of attention or have lots of friends. Quality trumps quantity every time. It's the depth of relationship that counts. Harvard discovered that having a few close friends, people you can rely on, is far more beneficial than having a vast social circle. They provide emotional support, reducing stress and increasing overall happiness. Your anchor in the tumultuous sea of life. I added that bit, by the way.
Did
that
you?
I wasn't a copy. I didn't copy all this down. But I just think that, again, when we start talking about this, And we start talking about quality relationships. Some people seem to think that the extrovert, if you're an extrovert, you've got loads of friends, you're really popular. Oh, I wish I was like, I wish I could tell a story like them. Oh, I wish I could be as engaging as them. But I'm introverted and I feel, that's not a problem because I think if we skip to the end, which we're not, but if we skip to the end, it's all about authenticity, isn't it?
Yeah.
So nothing is going to make you more unhappy than trying to be somebody you're not.
Yes. Yeah.
So if you're trying to be an extrovert, but you're not an extrovert, that must be so exhausting.
Yeah.
Absolutely exhausting. And of course, that's going to have an effect on your happiness and your mental health and emotional well-being, all sorts of stuff. So when we start talking about being introverted is not a disadvantage. It just means that, well, what is it that you actually want? Because, and as you sort of alluded to earlier on with the reference to social media, just because somebody else has got it doesn't mean to say that you should have it and you'll get the same outcome as them because we're all different.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about social media very shortly. But it's this authenticity, that understanding and I suppose embracing who you truly are. What is it that you want rather than what you think you should have?
Yes.
And when I say that, I'm not about sort of the shallow things, that shiny bangles or anything like that. But I'm talking about, well, what do you want? Do you want to be high-flying executive? Or are you angling for a promotion because you think that's expected of you? Is that truly what you want? I mean, don't get me wrong. If it is what you want, great stuff, go for it. But there's so many people out there. I say so many people. There are a fair few people out there. I mean, we've talked to people when we've done executive coaching, and they've come and they've sort of talked about promotion to a more senior level, and they may not have got that promotion, and you're sort of saying, well, that must be a bit rough. Well, no, I don't really want it. I went for it. I applied for it because I thought that was expected of me.
Yeah.
So they're not actually complaining about not getting promoted, but why didn't I get promoted? Well, actually, is it you?
Yeah. And I think you've made a really good point there in regards to kind of human beings very rarely know what it is that they actually need. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the book, The Good Life, which is written based on the Harvard study that was still running now, in the book itself, they mention in there that so often part of the one of the questions that they ask people is, what makes you happy? And people don't often know, or they just make a guess or assumption based on what they think they need in order to make themselves happy.
Right.
And it's so common. We don't actually give ourselves the opportunity to really sit down and think, right, okay, what is it that I do truly need?
Yeah.
Rather than what do I think I need?
Yeah. A bit Nanny McPhee, isn't it? Yeah. When you want me but you don't need me, I won't turn up. But when you need me but don't want me, I will.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I get that. It's, again, yeah, I mean, want and need. Interesting. You get to a point where you want things, expectations.
Yeah.
Need, gratitude. If you don't get them balanced or even actually hold your gratitude above your expectations, that can sometimes hit you in the feels. It can really impact on your sort of mental and emotional well-being if you've got these expectations. Well, I should have this.
Yeah.
But actually, I'm grateful for the fact that I've got this.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah.
All right. Let's just corral this because I think it needs to be said.
Okay.
Social media can be a double-edged sword. Connection versus comparison.
Mm.
Okay. Can I let you take the lead on this? Because you were sort of alluding to that earlier on.
I like that statement, connection versus comparison.
Mm.
As human beings, we need connection. It's wired in us as human beings. When we were first on Earth, we needed that connection to others. But now the world's completely different. So therefore, we seek out that connection through social media.
Mm.
But because of pictures, which are just the tiniest little snapshot, it's selected, it's chosen, it's been edited, and it's been sprinkled all over and then uploaded with a snazzy caption.
Yeah.
People then receive that and make an assumption of they're happy based on what in that one tiny little second of that photo being taken and then compare. And I think it's something that is incredibly damaging. We could do probably like a 2-hour podcast simply just on that topic itself.
Yeah, yeah.
it's really hard, I think.
It's tough.
But so many people are getting to that stage where they are seeing that that level of, they're seeking connection online through social media, but they're then falling in the trap of comparison. And they're then seeing the negative impact that's having on their well-being and happiness.
Yeah.
And actually what they're then doing is making a really good decision for them based on what they truly need and deciding, you know what? This isn't good for me. I'm just going to delete that profile. I'm not even going to go on there anymore because it's not good and it doesn't make me feel good.
Yeah, absolutely. We were talking earlier on about Facebook accounts being hacked and deleted.
Yes.
Since mine was hacked and I chose to delete it, I won't say my life's better, but I've found myself being a little bit more stable.
Yeah.
However,
you've still got your Instagram though.
Yeah, well, I was going to say there was that Instagram that Instagram incident where I accidentally posted a picture of me laid on my settee in my joggers, covered in Doritos, watching Love Island.
That's just a normal Friday night, though, right?
All these people. You okay, hon? DM me. Yeah. But yeah, it's I totally agree. So excessive use of the constant comparisons with others can lead to profound feelings of inadequacy and loneliness. Using social media, mindful of the fact that it is not a true representation, rather a curated snapshot, which is basically what you said in one sentence, but without the depth and expression. Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's absolutely. And the thing is, when we see these things, we're not looking at it from a logical and rational perspective, because we all know this. Mm. We all know that life is not perfect. But when we see somebody who is gifted in the sense that they may be genetically gifted, or they may have a lot of disposable income, or they may not have as much outlook. So they may be sort of younger people who are going out and living life, and they drive fast cars and they've got nice watches and they present themselves well and everything looks like it's going well.
Yes.
It's almost we're looking at it going, well, with envious eyes. Mm-hmm. Wish my life was like that. How can they do that?
Yeah.
I mean, I saw, look, there was a guy there not that long ago, and he was in a beautiful car. And my first thought was, can you afford the insurance on that? I couldn't get insured on that. What's going on there?
That's definitely a little bit of logic there.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? It's like, well, what are they doing different to me? How are they doing that?
And I think if you link it back to what's going on in your brain in that moment in time, so anyone who knows anything about T2 and us being the performance people and everything that we do links back into the brain and how we're wired. So in those situations, your brain, your limbic system, so that is the part of the brain that's your chimp, as Steve Peters refers to it, like or dislike, friend or foe, fight or flight. We are constantly being bamboozled with all of these different pictures, videos, and all sorts of wonderful things. And our chimp says, oh, I like that. You need that.
You should have that.
Why have you not got that? And that's where it starts.
Yeah.
And that then, if we don't control that in an effective way, can have a negative impact on how we feel. And it turns into that question from the curious chimp who wants to win all the time turns into a negative thought. And that's something that then we need to focus on fixing and controlling.
Yeah.
Because that will then have an immediate, it's not the right word, but will have potentially a long-term impact on our mental health and well-being.
Sure, absolutely. And again, when we start recognizing difference, yes, we're looking for a connection rather than a comparison. We're looking at difference because you've got some sort of influencer out there who's let's say it's a fitness influencer, and it's this person who's gorgeous. Oh, I say gorgeous. Obviously, they spend 18 hours a day in the gym. They eat right. They've got no other commitments other than online coaching or whatever. They eat right. They're getting loads of free stuff. They're getting loads. Send us free stuff. We need free stuff. They get loads of free stuff, and they're all doing unboxing and all this, that. Then everything's great. Everything looks great. And then you're sort of saying, well, if I do that, if I go on their coaching, if I do what they do, then that can happen to me.
Mm.
But you've got a job, you've got kids, you've got a dog, you've got to travel with work, you've got to. So all these friction points, all these little, was going to stop you from spending 18 hours in the gym and eating all the right stuff at the right time and all this. So you can't do what, you're not going to get what they get.
No.
So 4 months down the line, when you've spent a king's ransom on going on. And I'm not decrying, I'm not saying that this is the same with all online fitness influencers, but you spend a certain amount of money. Yeah, you're going to get to the point where you're not getting what you want. I mean, don't get me wrong, you might be getting results, but now you're sort of looking in the mirrors. Have you noticed mirrors aren't created equally? I've got mirrors in my bathroom, Tom. I've got mirrors in my bathroom that make me look cut.
Oh, yeah.
I look spectacular.
I know what you mean.
Compare that to a mirror in a hotel room in deepest, darkest Gloucestershire, and I'm looking at myself going, oh, what a waste you are. Oh, man, you old...
That's why you're so picky with
hotels. Yeah.
But I digress. You're not getting the outcome that you want.
Yeah.
So actually it's like, oh, so I feel even worse now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I put on comfort eating. Yeah. Not actually going out and doing the exercise that you said you were going to do. And everything's got an impact on you. And it just gets worse. And you get into that. So yeah. And it's that comparison. It's just an unfair comparison.
I think it's really dangerous. And what's... quite shocking as well is that the amount of research that's been done on mental health and well-being to the younger generations who have never lived in a world without the internet, without social media.
Great point to make,
and they are still developing.
Yeah.
Parts of their brain are still developing.
Yeah.
And they're surrounded by so many images, photos, videos, messages. And their brains are automatically like or dislike, oh, why have I not got that? Mm. That's going to have such a negative impact to our future generations. Yeah. And it's something that we need to be able to support people who are going through that. But I think for any adult or any human being, no matter what your age, if you are identifying that rather than seeking connection, you are falling into the trap of comparison, might need to have a little think about, what do I need to do here?
Yeah. Absolutely. We shouldn't be peddling perfection.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Moving swiftly on to number five, purpose over payment. Mm. So when we're looking at this, money doesn't guarantee happiness. Wealth and happiness not directly correlated. Money can provide security and comfort. It cannot buy long-lasting joy.
Mm.
Instead, finding purpose and meaning in our lives is what truly leads to lasting happiness. Get a job you like or love, make time for what you love, family, friends, hobby, interest. So I suppose this is sort of leaning into that eudaimonic well-being, that eudaimonic long-lasting purpose rather than the hedonic well-being. You've done a little bit of reading into this, haven't you?
So something that's it's mentioned quite a few times in The Good Life book. And in the book itself, so when they're, I think it's in like one of the first chapters where they're talking about why relationships matter, and they start making comparisons between how people actually think that money is the answer to that happiness.
Right.
And they actually mention another study within the book itself. And that was a study that was done in 2010 by Angus Deaton and Daniel Kahneman. They did a year-long survey.
Yeah.
So for a sample of 1,000 people to basically identify and try and quantify the relationship between happiness and money. And there was a few things that they identified. So from this survey that was done in 2010, they identified that like $75,000 was seen as like almost like the step over between like we're doing all right or we're not doing well, and then that seemed to be the expression there.
Yeah.
That seemed to be kind of like that shift over point.
Yeah.
And they identified that for those making less than $75,000 per year, it did have an impact to their happiness. And actually those earning more than that, it didn't really have much of an impact. And in one particular quote that I've got here is, more money does not necessarily buy more happiness, but less money is associated with emotional pain.
Right, okay.
So this is where at lower levels of income, money brings benefits that are necessary to survival, safety, and a feeling of control.
Mm. Okay.
Which makes sense, really.
Of course,
For those people who are earning a small amount of money, then that will have an impact to their happiness. If it's impacting them being able to put food on the table, to provide for themselves, their family.
Quality of life, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's quality of life because you've got so much money you can spend. There's so much money that the government take off you. For various reasons. And then what you're left with, you know what, this is gonna feed my family, clothe my family, payment. And then what's left over that? Well, we'll start talking about disposable income. Well, actually, that can be spent on in nice experiences and days out with the kids and blah, 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 and holidays and things. And so it doesn't necessarily buy happiness, but if you haven't got it, you feel that pain. You feel that pinch.
Yes. Yeah? So if you are struggling financially, then that will have an impact on, that will give you emotional pain. Hmm. But I would also then challenge that if you've got some really good quality relationships there, then that would potentially or could potentially balance it out. Hmm. And also as well, they identified that those with a higher level of income, the meaning of money then starts to become more abstract. Hmm. So because it's no longer giving them that feeling of happiness, and that's then when we start to see things such as pride, status, and ego.
Right.
Okay. Having a part to play.
Right.
So money does have an impact on happiness when it helps give us that survival, that feeling of safety, and we've got the feeling of control.
Right.
Once all those threes have been hit, it doesn't matter how much money we're receiving, it doesn't have an impact on our overall happiness.
Okay. So that's really interesting because, I mean, obviously this has just sparked a thought in my mind. I haven't got the capacity to research this. But when we start looking at poverty-stricken areas, so there's going to be areas in the country which are more poverty-stricken, we'll go into the sort of the geographical situations or anything like that. But time and time again, I tend to find that in these, and I'll use the word deprived, advisedly or inadvisedly, I'm not sure. But I use the word deprived. I constantly, more often than not, see these stories of these people who run voluntary organisations for the good of the community, yeah? So now what we're looking at is somebody who isn't necessarily in a position where they've got money dripping out of them, yeah? They're in a financially, fiscally challenged situation. However, that is not what they focus their lives on. Mm-hmm. Yes, they've got to earn money, they've got to pay bills, they've got to pay food and things like that. But what they're focused on is now the good of the community.
Yeah.
How we're going to make people happy. It may even be we see a problem the problem in this community. So how are we going to help the community, the future of the community? How are we going to take the younger people and make sure that their future is more beneficial to them than keep them in this situation? Mm. So now we've got people who are actually finding that purpose. And we said purpose over payment. Mm. So yes, we've got to, I'm not saying that there's anything noble about being skint. Yeah?
Yeah.
What I'm saying is there's going to be people out there that will struggle to feed the kids or pay bills and things like that. But actually, rather than sitting there and sort of sitting there going, I can't pay my kid, can't pay my bills, can't feed my kids, what they're doing is they're going out and they're putting a football team together, or they're making community gardens, building a sort of thing on the news the other day about these vegetable patches. So they're building beds. In a city, and I can't remember what city it was actually, but in the inner city, they're making these beds and planting vegetables, not plants.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And now those vegetables actually help go out into the community, but the people who are doing it feel a sense of worth.
Yeah.
Purpose. Yeah. And they're learning. And not only that, but you've got younger members of the community who have seen this act and going, well, it's more than just about me.
Yes.
It's about the community and how much we can give to the community. So actually, there's a lot going on there. And I'm not sort of saying that this should be prompted by a lack of funds or anything like that. But what I'm saying is purpose rather than payment. It's that. And if you've got a job that you like, then that's brilliant. And if you get the pay packet you like, that's absolutely brilliant. But if you've got a job you don't like and you're thinking about leaving, and then somebody turns around and says, I'll give you a pay rise, 5 grand a year, and you go, all right, I'll do that. Not going to change the job.
Yeah, and what you're doing there is you're hitting that short-term happiness. Feel good because you're getting a little bit of extra money a month, but long-term.
The problems you see when you've paid the problems you see at 30 grand are going to be the same as the problems at 35 grand.
Yeah.
So, yeah, short-term hit. Good stuff. We're making progress.
We are. What's next?
Number six, taking care of health is crucial. Emphasising the importance of taking care of our physical and mental health. Regular exercise, maintaining a balanced diet, and seeking support when needed are essential for overall well-being and happiness. Prioritising self-care allows us to show up fully in our lives and experience greater levels of happiness. Health is wealth. And when it comes to exercise, something is better than nothing.
Mm.
So what we're saying here is, you've got to, I suppose, you're sort of looking after your vehicle, aren't you?
Mm.
Preventative maintenance. You may be sort of thinking that, actually, this is, I don't get another body. I don't get to a particular stage in my life where I check this body in and I get another body out. Yeah?
Yeah.
We've got to start thinking about the health and well-being, exercise, eating well. But that, as we know, stimulates brain chemicals, which makes us feel better.
Yeah.
But again, we're not sort of saying that, yes, we've got to take care of our health, but we're not sort of saying that everybody needs to be a gym bunny. It's got to be applicable to you.
Yes.
And where that's concerned, something is better than nothing.
Yes.
So we're not saying that you've got to go into the gym every single morning, come out a pile of blubbering sweat. You know what? That was bloody hard working. And you've got to do that every morning. If that's not your thing, you're not going to benefit from that.
Yeah.
However, taking the stairs rather than the lift. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Walking rather than taking the bus. There's little things we can do. But if you like that sort of thing, the podcast that Tracy did with the Project Y, yeah, we'll check out the Project Y. If you're a subscriber, we know you've already seen it probably. If you're not a subscriber, subscribe. But yeah, Project Y, all about health and fitness, some great podcasts there. Mm. So yeah, I think that's something that we've got to be mindful of. And again, that is number six from the seven harsh truths.
Yeah.
Somebody once said, if we don't eat our food like medicine, we'll take our medicine like food.
Yeah.
Which is, okay, fair enough then.
And if you think as well around living a good long life as well, it's something that's really important to make sure that we are looking after our physical body as well. That said, part of the study they have identified is that those who are having their over 80, let's say, and they are having a few challenges with their body at that age. They've got aches, they've got quite a few physical pains. So if we're talking 80 plus men, women, and they are feeling levels of physical pain, if they have good, strong, quality relationships that are being met and satisfied frequently, then the study identified that they had a good level of happiness.
Right, okay.
And what they actually identified is that those who didn't have good, strong, quality relationships and were feeling physical pain, then that had a negative impact on that level of feeling of happiness.
Right, okay.
So actually, even at certain age when we're feeling as though we're in pain because we're not looking after our bodies or simply just due to age or whatever's going on, if we haven't got good, strong, quality relationships, then that we're going to have a bigger impact.
Magnify it. Yeah. Oh,
It's really interesting.
Yeah. Very much so. Very much so.
So it links back to that first point.
Yeah, certainly. Very much. Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. Last one on this list and then we can sort of break it down a bit. It's never too late to improve happiness. So regardless of age or life stage, you can make positive changes, cultivate meaningful relationships, pursue passions and prioritise well-being, embrace the belief that you have the agency to shape your own happiness. Let this knowledge be your guiding light to a more fulfilling life. I wrote that. Incredible.
So inspiring.
Well, yeah, that's it.
Well, yes, thank you.
Yeah, I'm expecting you to superimpose some blue skies and things behind me. But yeah, okay. So I think this is quite reassuring in the sense that listening to everything we've talked about so far, or if somebody's reading the article, it might be, well, you know what? I haven't got very many friends. I haven't got very many friends that I trust or I've called it relationships with. I'm a bit introverted. I struggle to get out there. I don't get much opportunity to get out there. I don't particularly like social media or the internet, or maybe I have a poor relationship with social media or the internet. I haven't got much purpose in my life. I might not have much money in my life. So it may very well be we get down to there and it's like, well, it's looking a bit bleak. However, that last bit there, it's never too late to change.
Yeah.
So when we start talking about, right, where we said that we mentioned earlier on, am I running away from that or am I moving towards that?
Mm.
So I don't want that. Okay, so let's reframe this. So if you don't want that, what are you going to do to not get that?
Yeah.
So now we're going positive. We're getting, what can we do about this? What small changes can we make?
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, we're very unrealistic to expect complete changes. It's very, very unrealistic to think, right, I'm going to have a garage sale. I'm going to get rid of all the negative things in my life. I don't care what I get from, but I need to make space for the positivity. I need to make space for the realism that what I can choose. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take charge. We can do that, but it's got to be to your own. You've got to be authentic, and I think this is the absolutely underlying thing for the whole thing is that authenticity.
Mm.
So if we can be authentic in all things, I mean, we talk about this when we start talking about print, unconscious motivators. When we start thinking about those unconscious motivators, if they're compromised, we're in shadow. We're not happy in shadow.
Mm.
Yeah?
Exactly, yeah.
But if those are not compromised, then actually we'll spend more time in best self, which could be construed as happiness, mm-hmm. but a level of positivity.
Yes.
We're actually achieving our unconscious motivators on a daily basis, positively and proactively.
Mm-hmm.
So you do you.
Yeah, really important you do you. Identify what it is that you truly need. Mm-hmm. What is it that you enjoy as well? Where is it that you get that feeling of happiness, which is what we're talking about today? I know for myself, so a few years ago, kind of just straight after kind of the pandemic, a relationship breakdown, spent all of this time feeling really lonely as someone who's extroverted, who likes to be around people.
Mm.
And I came out of the pandemic in that situation where actually I need to be around people. It's where I get my energy. But the quality of friendships that I had at the time weren't great.
Right,
so therefore, it just added to that feeling of loneliness. And actually, I knew I had to almost sit down with myself and think, right, okay, what is it that gives me that feeling of enjoyment and happiness? Something that, something that I'm unconsciously motivated towards enjoying myself and being happy. So it's like extra strong, that need. And for me, it's exploring, going out, being out in nature. I love nothing better than going out for a nice walk with the dog or a big hike, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But I knew that I enjoy doing it, just me and the dog, but I get more enjoyment when I'm doing it with other people and I've got people with me.
Hmm.
But I knew that despite me banging on about it with all my friends around me or family members, all of those different interactions and relationships with different people, no, that wasn't an interest to anyone.
Mm.
So it added to that feeling of loneliness. Yeah, I can go out and it makes me feel good, but I'm still not getting that connection with another human being. So therefore what I did was used the internet to help me in the situation, found a group where online where I could meet people who had the same hobby, the same interest as me.
Yeah.
And some of my best friendships that I've got now today, years later, came from that.
Yeah.
Finding that.
Connection.
That was where, the connection.
Yeah.
And the right quality connection as well. Whereas I could have in that situation just thought, you know what, I'm just feeling really lonely and all of my friends just, they're not interested. Maybe it's me. Maybe I shouldn't be interested in this. Maybe I should be interested in what they're doing instead, going out and getting drunk every weekend.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah.
Sorry.
But that's where it comes back down to, what is it that gives you that feeling of happiness?
Authentically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's important to you.
Yeah. And I think... definitely the thing that I think one of the biggest blocks to that is being your inauthentic self, being what you think you should be rather than actually. And I think that could be a big, thanks for sharing that, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm glad you used the word dog. the actual channeling of all goodness and happiness. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, good stuff. Well, that's the seven harsh truths. I think we've thrashed them out quite well.
Yeah. Before we finish, it'd be really good just to clarify for people. What is the one thing that they can take away from this?
Yeah.
So we've spoken about authenticity, but if someone is watching or listening to this right now, and they are thinking, you know what, I'm not too sure what my level of happiness is right now, what advice, what can they do?
Well, I think for me, and bearing in mind this is me being my authentic self, I'd probably do something similar to you and make a list.
Yes. Yeah.
Because if you try and just think about it, it can become overwhelming.
Yes.
I think that the brain chemicals and the various parts of the brain can interfere and can sort of colour your perception and inform your bias. Mm-hmm. So I think that sometimes it's nice to actually write things down, to sort of sit down and try and be as objective as possible. It might be names of people, relationships. It could be this when we start talking about the social fitness thing.
Yes.
Writing that social fitness checklist down, just for the benefit of everybody. Safety and security, learning and growth, emotional closeness and confiding, identity, affirmation and sharing experience, romantic intimacy, help, informational and practical, and fun and relaxation. Those are the seven things I would write down there, and I would probably allocate a name from a relationships perspective. Who gives me that?
Yes.
Or, and this is the reality of it, I'm afraid, it's not necessarily the best news, you might go, well, who stops me from doing that? Who negatively influences me? Because we're not necessarily... I mean, the reality of the situation is many people could be in a situation with negative people, with negative attitudes, negative habits, and they just can't see a way out.
Yeah.
So actually, this person here really sort of trips my trigger on this particular thing, and I don't get, well, maybe that's that person I need to move out.
Yeah.
Yeah. But when I move these people out, how am I going to replace them? So now we can start thinking about social media being a tool for connection, purpose over payment, doing voluntary work or something, gaining some purpose, taking over health and fitness. You might actually open yourself up to a new circle of friends and people there. Being introverted is not a disadvantage. Well, and loneliness is deadly. Yeah, that also will link into it. But I think that's all the authenticity, the power of making change. But don't make change for change's sake. I think using that list and being able to sort of make those identifications of going, right, so who am I going to keep and who am I going to cut free?
Yeah.
Yeah? And again, that's when your authenticity and your honesty. So let's think about two things here. Motivation and discipline. So your motivation to do this is that you're not happy with your lot in life. The discipline you have to demonstrate is doing it.
Yes.
You can talk about it, you can think about it, you can read a book about it, you can see somebody else doing it, but doing the thing is only doing the thing, and you've got to be able to do that. And it can be so empowering, but it can be so scary.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think when it comes to happiness, what is it that gives us happiness? I mean, this study is still ongoing now. It's been going for over 80 years now. And the one number thing that they have identified is that relationships matter.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really important. So yes, in life, be authentic to yourself. Identify what it is that you truly need, not what you want based on social media, what you assume you think you might need.
Yeah.
What is it that you truly need? Where is it that you get your good boost of happy chemicals where you makes you feel good?
Yeah.
And who have you got around you? Because ultimately, to live a long, good life, we need to have good quality relationships around us, and those good quality relationships need to be frequent.
Yes,
as well.
Need to be nurtured and fed.
Yes.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Bernice. Always a pleasure, as I said before. That's it for this T2 Hubcast. See you again for another T2 Hubcast very shortly. Bye-bye now.